drinking in heaven.
Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. You are listening to Creative Mindset with Robert Sevilla and his guest co-host today, Chris Rosales. I will be having a show within the next couple of weeks. You'll be hearing the promos for, known as People Talk. And so listen for those, and please tune in and call in.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. When is your show going to be?
About 2 weeks from now. So
what time?
Mid-June. It's going to be 8 o'clock on Monday nights.
8 o'clock. Oh, that's good. It's better than 11, 12 at night.
Feel it out. I think that most listeners and callers will probably want to call around the 8 o'clock hour rather than maybe the 11 or 12 o'clock.
Who knows? It's not that easy to get a caller in.
No, it's not. But
it's easier to get a guest in. And today's guest, we have Kristen Gustafson.
So close. Gusky.
Mm-hmm. And you are a yoga therapist. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So I like to back up and talk about what creative mindset is to me. So creative mindset is just it's like, as Chris says, you would know, a growth mindset. So it's the same thing. In fact, I came up with a name because Nico was talking about it. And I'm like, that's just like creativity. That's being like an artist, Nico. So being in a growth mindset, or in this case, a creative mindset, is always growing, keeping your mind open, learning new things. And one thing, I know yoga, but I didn't know what yoga, or I do yoga. I think I kind of know yoga, like what it basically is, but yoga therapy I thought was something else, which I actually thought it was Chris is a licensed therapist, a mental health therapist, and I thought it was somebody like you.
More psychotherapy combined with yoga?
With yoga,
which is done, and which is a beautiful thing if you can make it work.
Which is done. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like where I work, right, with patients and whatnot, they thoroughly enjoy yoga, and it's a great way for them to be able to use like a certain skill, right, the tip skill, right, which is part of that is intense exercise, right, and mm-hmm. yoga can be part of that exercise routine. Also helps them be more mindful, learn how to relax, be in control mm-hmm. of their thoughts, their breathing. So it's super important.
Yep.
And also they love it, so I just need to learn to be more flexible.
There are plenty of yoga therapists that are also counselors in some way or psychologists in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I've met a lot of them. And I mean, you're doing good work. It serves a purpose. And I have not been, full disclosure, I have not been to yoga in quite some time. I really need to get back into it. It's definitely something I use for meditation purposes, right? That really helps uh-huh. clear my mind. So I'm guilty. And maybe this conversation today is going to, you know, encourage me to go.
Well, you know, I'd like to start with, actually, let's start with a little bit of background on you. But after that, I want to come in and kind of talk about my experience, because I did come to your class and wanted mm-hmm. to talk about at least the differences I found in yoga. I've been doing yoga for 7 years now, maybe longer. And your class was like a remembering why I liked it, why I got into it. It was cool. It was nice. So please, let's kind of first just talk about like who you are, where you come from.
Oh, that's a long story.
Oh, is it?
Oh, of course. Everything about me is kind of a long story.
The cliff notes.
Please. Actually, where I come from. I come from everywhere. My mom's a bit of a nomad. So when my parents divorced, we moved all over the place. And so it was when we finally moved in with grandma in San Diego, California, that I was introduced to Buddhism. And I was 10. And immediately recognized something there for me. And maybe what it was stability in a very chaotic world that I was living in. And kept up that practice for a very long time. I would say definitely my roots are Buddhist. And then when I went back to Colorado, which is where I was born, Boulder, Colorado, and finished high school, got a degree in Fort Collins, and then decided sometime in my 20s I would actually go to yoga teacher training school, not because I ever wanted to teach, because that's ridiculous. Who wants to teach yoga? and here I am many trainings later. And also in that chaos, at about 13, my mom had a book on yoga just sitting on her shelf, and I couldn't sleep at night, and I was a really anxious kid. And so I started just, you know, doing stuff in the book and added that to my Buddhist practice. And so it's been a lifelong pursuit. It's been, I say it's literally saved my life to be a sadhika. So I just kept adding trainings on and knowing that eventually I wanted to help other people the way the yoga has helped me.
So you said the first thing that sparked your interest was Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
So Buddhism, they say it's not a religion. It's just a thought. It's a
way of life. Like a way yoga. Of life.
I was going to say a way of life is mm-hmm. what I remember from what I learned about it. Yeah. Right? It was probably the religion that I sort of gravitated towards mm-hmm. the most out of like anything offered. Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that you could go like with any, with any interest, you can take it dogmatic and take it into a religion. And so I definitely did practice within inside a circle and a group, and we did things together. But, you know, overarching was compassion for all beings, service and humanity, and working with your own thoughts and your own work, inner work to do your growth.
These are the things that attracted you to Buddhism.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we talked about in the beginning of like learning new things. I like people to kind of have a takeaway. And I think even though this wasn't the initial intent, but some people think that Buddhism is a religion. Mm-hmm. And maybe in the beginning, I kind of thought it was, just because it seemed like that. But in the end, it's just a way of life. It's a
philosophy, right?
It's a philosophy. Yeah. And it, when it comes down to it, those, I don't think anyone would disagree with any of the philosophies, Buddhist teachings. Mm-hmm. What are they called? Are they called dharmas? Mm-hmm. What are dharmas?
Dharma in general.
Vocabulary test.
And in general, across all of the Eastern traditions, when we're talking Dharma, we're saying it is your path. It is your way. So not the way, right? That's, you know, Star Wars. But but your way.
Your way. The way. Okay, cool.
And kind of you could say like you're walking a path of Dharma if you're walking a path of service, or you're walking a path of how am I contributing to this earth that I'm on. So it's referenced like that in many different ways, because when we get into the overarching Eastern philosophies, as you will, they all melded together in the Middle East around the same time. So there was Buddhist thought, and there was Tantric thought, and there was Hindu thought, and they all melded together, and they all had Dharma and service and your path as kind of, you know, the overarching why are you, do you do what you do.
What do you think?
Large question.
It was a large question.
Starting to feel like I'm subconsciously living my Dharma. Every day I wonder, how did I get here and why do I do what I do?
Well, there you go.
And then I see the impact that it makes on people's lives. And I'm like, well, this is probably confirming why I'm here right now, the right place at the right time in my life, right? And I feel like, I don't know, I guess there's a lot of teachings that are very relatable in Buddhism, right, that I'm just not aware of, right? But I feel like I'm practicing some of that stuff unintentionally every day. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's, I don't know, a general state of consciousness for most people. But
Chris, are you saying that you found your Dharma? Like you know your purpose in life?
Yeah, I think right now my purpose in life, right, is to try to help heal and repair others, right? And I've been through a lot of pain and suffering myself, right, to understand what it's like to be there. So, you start to feel in whatever that you do that there's some sort of form of imposter syndrome, right? And you guess and you second guess yourself quite often. And it's the feedback that I've gotten from the people that I work with, you know, and that's not just people that are professionals. It's the people whose lives are changing because of just the interactions that we have, right? That transference of energy, right? That makes them want to continue on. I work with a lot of people who are at the last leg of their life, right? They're really they're on the edge, and it's my job to kind of talk them off the ledge. And so it's a very powerful experience. You know, so
and bless you for that. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah,
but it's a hard job, and I just feel like I'm in the right place at the right time.
I want to agree with you so much with that's how Dharma feels, in my opinion, because it's very humble. It's kind of like, I'm not doing this. You kind of step back and you have to look at the feedback and you have to look at the picture and go, oh, somehow I'm serving. I'm not sure it's me. I think it's moving through me.
Exactly. Like a vessel, yeah, right?
Like a vessel. That's what we call it.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what it feels like. And I'm just kind of going with it. And finally in my life, I feel like, you know, we all want a life's purpose. I think we're always searching for that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes what we're searching for is the opposite of what we actually are here for. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a lot of trial by fire and a trial and error, right, to get there. But like I said, the lives that I help change every day change me as well. So I'll end it on that. Mm. I am not a holy person, and I have a lot of things ashamed of. Lots of humility, right? Mm. But, you know, that helps every day, right, to help heal others, including myself. So.
Cool. Well, I'm going to give you some, because you're new to this and this is part of your training. So when we talk across here and then when we talk to across this way, so just, you just kind of pivot your mouth. So you're always kind of talking at that tip.
Right in the front.
There otherwise, yeah. Otherwise you hear how it kind of drops off.
I'm always on that microphone. So this is just kind of a new experience.
I mean, people can still hear you, but it will help out.
It will enhance.
Yeah. I don't think I had that awareness in the beginning. And I was always...
a little rusty.
I didn't have any of the other DJs. I did one day of training. And then I was like, I learned by doing.
I got it.
Why I learned by doing. Let's just start this. But yeah, you know what? That was interesting. So do you... I like these. Eventually, I want to get into the yoga therapy, but I think all the cool stuff that comes from that you can learn through yoga. So in the beginning, or when I went to your class a while back, you started off with what is yoga? Yoga is oneness. Is that what you said?
Oh, I mean, oh, goodness sakes, if you're defining yoga. There's so much, but it's important to me in class that we're not just saying, I'm doing yoga. Mm-hmm. Yoga is a practice, and we're all practitioners. And so we need to understand what exactly we're practicing. Are we practicing postures? And then my teacher would say, no, these are placements, right? Asana translates to, I'm placing myself. Mm-hmm. So how are we placing ourselves? How are we placing our breath, our attention, our emotions? Our energy. So how are we doing a placement? And so then that placement turns into what are we aware of? And that's true yoga practice, right? What am I aware of? So therefore, I can be practicing anywhere at any time, including this moment, sitting on the radio with you. What am I mm-hmm. aware of? And then that gets into when I'm fully aware and present, then I'm in a oneness. So yoga being union or a oneness or wholeness of self.
When you said that you were looking for, is that what you said? Looking for structure, and then you found Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kind of found it. At first, I was kind of pushing yoga away, mm-hmm. only because my wife at the time and I came to this town, and she was certified in Pilates, and I was like, Pilates, new technology. I'm always down with the new technologies. I'm like, that 1,000-year-old or 500-year-old asana practice and things like that. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they got to learn some things. And so I kind of just resisted until I went on like a work vacation and they had yoga, and my friend's like, this is the place to do it. And it was out in this beautiful bay, and I'm like, you're right, this is the place to do it. So it was the first time I did it, and it was all quiet, you know, wasn't any loud music, wasn't like a club scene, and you know, there was no one to listen to in the back. It was just this kind of cool, and it was something super gentle. I don't remember what it was, mm-hmm. but I remember when I came back, I'm like, I like to try that again, just to tune back in to that cool. It was Nicaragua, like on the Pacific coast of Nicaragua, in this private little bay. It was gorgeous.
It's quite the first experience.
I know. Yeah, it was a super cool experience. And then I came back.
Mine was in Iowa. You know, I'm just kidding.
And it just started teaching me like the stillness, mm-hmm. and it kept teaching me of the stillness that I found in that, kept linking to other things. And then I started to notice that it was helping me see things that I couldn't see before. Mm-hmm. It was allowing all of these things to open. Then came midlife crisis. And I'm like, man, all of this stuff's coming out and nothing's going back until I evaluate it and look at things. Like anything that's going back in this closet of mine, I'm going to see if I still need it. And it's still a new practice. For example, these shoes. Look at these shoes. I got new shoes. I realized that. Like,
look at the placement on those shoes.
I know. Your Converse come to a point, right? I realized, I'm like, my toes don't want to be in a point, man. They want to be all splayed out.
Free.
Yeah.
You've got wide feet. That's what you got.
Right. Well, I got long toes.
Yeah, I got narrow.
But I'm like, the awareness of I think I enjoy the looking at small things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I used to not. And it's still going on. And I think that stuff comes from basically a mindfulness. But I learned that from yoga, and I learned that from just kind of before anything goes back in that closet of what I'm going to be storing and using forward in my life, I just want to look at. So I found yoga. I am certified, or I took a yoga 200-hour class, and I took that just to schedule my spirituality, because I found that spirituality as a foundation. Like I learned that it was, I don't like religion so much to speak, because it seems like a recipe for corruption, in that giving all of this power to one person and to looking at this, you know, someone in a church type
sort
of thing.
Sort of deity, and then others with like their titles, right? Like,
yeah. It's difficult not to get corruption in that. But true. I definitely enjoy all that comes with those traditions, because usually they have fantastic things like tools for grief or tools for mm-hmm. all of these life things. Fantastic. I learned.
But I also just really like the incense.
and the incense.
I mean, I'm really a huge aromatherapy kind of guy. I just like the incense. You know, some of the pageantry. You know, I like the, you know, all of that jazz, man. That's really, that's what's selling it for me.
But it's something.
Also, how I feel afterwards.
Spirituality comes from has a grounding. I think that nothing else quite gives. Instead of looking, you know, it's nice to look at. Yeah. Through that also, learning humility, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah. That's why I try to look out. That's what this show actually does for me, is to remind me to talk about someone else, think about someone else besides me.
Besides yourself, man. It's important.
Yeah. I wanted to, yeah, so two things there. So the first thing, my teacher, so I say very often, speaking of humility, that there's nothing that I'm, it's all coming through me from my teachers. And so, you know, anything that's the fault of my own is mine, you know, and mm-hmm. what's coming through me is them, and with great humility of what I've been taught, what I've been given. So specifically Indu, Aurora, one of my teachers, she'll say yoga is a work in, not a work out. Mm. And so you're talking about that going inward and things get quieter, but that's exactly it. That when we're in a practice, and specifically even more of a practice of yoga therapy, that that we're learning to remove things, not to add things. And a lot of times when people come to me in pain, for example, as I'm a chronic pain management specialist, they're saying, you know, what do I do? You know, what do I take? What medicine do I take? What do I do? How do I fix this? And yoga says, well, we don't do anything. We start to remove things. We start to clear, like you're saying, like you take everything out of the closet and then you only put back in what's serving you and you give everything else off to Goodwill. But we have so much in our closets, all the way from our patterning from childhood, you know, that we've just been patterned or conditioned, and that's not our fault. But how do we pull things apart and simplify? Or you mentioned creating a structure would be that we need some sort of structure to be able to do that, because I've tried doing it without structure and mm-hmm. and my mental health suffered greatly. You know, mentioning that, you know, yoga saved my life, is it gave me a toolbox, but it also gave me a structure with which to do that, but without the guilt and the shame that comes along with what you said with religion, is sometimes we can get it so pigeonholed and dogmatic that that we're not empowered. We're just ashamed. And so I don't feel like we should do it alone. I really enjoy the community and we need help and we need others. But at the same time, we need to feel empowered to be able to go inside of us, work in order to move back out and change how we look at things. So...
yeah, it's a cool phrase. Look or work in,
work out, and I like that.
And then simplifying, because that's mm-hmm. really what it comes down to. If you have trouble explaining what it is, it's probably because there's so many things involved. Mm-hmm. But it's time for a break. It's 4:20. It's a 4:20 break.
It's 4:20.
Oh boy!
Oh my gosh!
So we'll be right back.
Hey, come check out and tune in to Jukebox Jenny on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. It's the Working Woman Blues Show on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio 88.1 and 92.3 FM. If you dig soul, you dig funk, if you dig R&B and blues, then this is the cocktail that will soothe the soul. The Working Woman Blues Show, Sunday night on KYRS with Spokane and the Inland Empire's favorite host, Jukebox Jenny. Get yourself some. Sunday nights, 6 to 8 p.m.
Hi, this is Maeve Griffith from Stage Left Theater. Your radio station, KYRS, actively supports the diversity of the Spokane area, celebrating the many voices that make up our region. Our volunteer-run station hosts a variety of shows that feature otherwise unheard perspectives and opinions. In a sense, KYRS is working against institutional racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression simply by existing in opposition to mainstream media. Please make a pledge today by texting GIVE KYRS to 44321. Your support keeps KYRS operating during a time when our community needs free and open media the most.
Thin Air Community Radio and Brick West present Brick West 2024, Saturday, June 1st. Get ready to start your summer with our first annual Brick Fest, all-day live music festival in the West End Plaza. Open to the public all day Saturday, June 1st, with 10 acts, two stages, featuring Vika and the Velvets, London Get Down, Warren Dunes, Last of the Red Hot Mamas, The Holy Broke, Rosie Cerquone, Jimmy Noogie, like saying Ted Nugent without the ent, so I guess it's Jimmy Nuge. Kyle Richard, August to August, presented by KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. This is going to be huge. Mark your calendars for Brick West on June 1st. Brick West Plaza, 1318 West 1st Avenue in Spokane.
And we're back.
Right on.
There you go. That was his first
PSA.
PSA.
Well done.
Thank you. Excellent. Excellent work. Okay, so this is KYRS, and you're listening to Creative Mindset with Robert Sevilla in studio. We have Kristen.
Good luck. Gusky.
Gusky.
Kristen Gusky. What a name.
From Colorado, and then expat
else.
Of San Diego. Good burrito. And then back to Boulder, right? Fort mm-hmm. Collins area.
And okay. Lots of other places in between, but let's not,
We don't got to go there.
Okay, so we're talking about we're talking about yoga, and the main thing that I think we're eventually getting to is what is yoga therapy? Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about like what leads people. That's what the first 20 minutes is about. Like what leads people to yoga? One might be flexibility, but as maybe we haven't spoken about it, but yoga or the idea of yoga was around a long time before they actually added the poses.
What
did you call them? Not the
asana.
You call them positions, or what did you call them?
Placement is really the translation. Is placement
is a placement. So it was just an idea. Mm-hmm. Of oneness, of stillness, of mindfulness, of this practice. The yoga is not a religion.
Not even close.
It's just, it's in a way kind of like Buddhism. There's no spirituality that you take home. There's no chance that you...
It's a way of life. Way of life, right? Philosophy of some sort, right?
Yeah. Goodness. I mean, it's so hard to explain, but I'm impressed because yes, way before there were ever postures, the practice of yoga was, how do I go inward? And so then as they were going inward, the practitioners, the sadhikas were going inward. They were saying, oh man, I just can't sit long enough. Oh man, how do I tame my monkey mind? Oh man, how do I, work with my emotions? And so they started developing techniques, and that led to lots of things. So if the question of like, how yoga developed into all the different techniques is they basically just went, what if I do this? Well, what if I do this? So there's no like book and somebody wrote it and said, this is the way. We can go to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, but to be honest, I'm more on the tantric side. And so there's much more study of the Bhagavad Gita and a few other things. And so the Yoga Sutras were just like, this is one way that I did it. Mm-hmm. And so then in teaching yoga or practicing yoga, there's never right or wrong. Or as I say, there's no bad or wrong. It's simply, this is the way that I've been shown to do it. And if it works for you, great. So if we went into a category of a religion, it would be like, well, this is the way, this is the only way. And mm-hmm. otherwise, you're not accepted. And in yoga, saying all of us have the intuitive sense to know what's right for us. We all have the same energetic pulsation, the same vibration of all things. So if we're headed back to that oneness, then that means that your intelligence is as much as mine. And so then if we wanted to head to yoga, it's how do I tap into that intelligence? So most people head to yoga either because they want to be more flexible and they want to work out. And then they realize, man, this is quiet and a little bit hard and I have to be alone with myself. And who even am I? And then they want to know more. Or they're seeking that deeper intelligence. They're seeking that deep oneness that says there's got to be more than just like get up every day and have coffee and go to work and then watch a show and go to bed. There's got to be something else here.
That's the goodness that I'm after. I mean, I think now I'm going to skip over to our experience in that I've been doing like hot yoga And it's like a butt kicking yoga where you're
like
almost
Bikram, wanting, like
yeah,
really hot,
straight up Bikram or Ghosh. Mm-hmm. And it's almost along the workouts where there's something to exhausting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That feels good, and that is definitely part of it. But when I went to yours, it was this gentle reminder that I'm driving this like meat suit, that I'm like in my body and I'm communicating to my body and I'm okay with the tightness that it might have and that I'm allowing room for it to relax and open, and then finding out where those... if my hips are tight and they open, it gives you this, or it gave me this invitation. Your class was like this invitation to kind of delve deeper into, while my hips are tight, now they're dropped. Like, what actually happened? Like, what did I just let go of?
Yeah.
Besides, you know, letting my knees dropping down. And that's, I think that's the stuff that I'm always after mm-hmm. in yoga. I think it's probably where I'm always after in life itself. Those are the fun things for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, that said, I mean, is that the point of what your yoga therapy?
I want to give you an awesome metaphor that I hope you guys love and others love. And it's one I speak a lot, like when I'm with clients. So I have quite a few people who say, yes, do you believe you're your car? You probably like your car. You know, it's fun to drive. Maybe you pick a certain one because it matches your personality. So are you your car?
No.
No. Okay. You guys would agree. No. Yeah, but okay. It's the one you picked. So we could liken our car to our body.
It's the one I could afford.
And some of us have a little body damage, some scratches, some dings. It's the one we can afford. It's aging a little, right? So that would be your anamaya kosha. That would be your physical or food body, right?
Okay.
And we take good care of it. And then we could say, well, okay, so then are you the gas that goes in the car? Well, no, I'm not necessarily. I need that for my car to go, and it gets me places, but the fuel in my car isn't me either. So that's your pranamaya kosha. That's your breath. That's your heartbeat. That's your endocrine system, right? It helps it run, and it can't go without it, but it's not exactly who I am, right? And so we can go underneath a layer, and we can say, okay, well, then I must be the steering wheel. But that's your manomaya kosha. That's your mind saying, I want to go here. Now I want to turn, and I go here, and then I want to stay straight on the road. Okay? So we're not necessarily that either, right? But we have a little more control there. We have a little more awareness there. But then you're starting to go, well, then who am I? You know, am I the driver of the car? Am I the person driving this car and making sure that the wheel turns correctly and the gas is gassed correctly and the car is in good shape, right? If my hips are tight, that might just be the tires. Maybe I just need a tire tune-up. But it doesn't affect the driver of the car. So am I that person? And that would be your vinamaya kosha. That's your witness. That's the one sitting in the driver's seat watching this happen. But yoga therapy says we're not even that. Like, we need to get to the witness so we can see how we're driving and where and why and what to tune up. So my hips are tight, and what happens when they're not tight, or what happens when I pay attention. But what we really are is the anandamaya kosha. We really are the one who wanted to get in the car in the first place. The one who's driving to grandma's house, the one who's, you know, driving to the park, right? We wanted to get in this car to go somewhere, and that's who we are. And so then we want to be a good driver and turn the steering wheel correctly and put gas in the car and take care of the car. But it's all because we have a deep desire to be or to go. And so when we get into that heart of it, it's like, okay, my hips are tight and I want to take good care of them. But it doesn't mean that's who I am, and it doesn't become crazy important to me that I push or pull or fix. It's just the car I'm in right now.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty powerful. So then as we continue to work in toward that anandamaya kosha, then we start to feel really differently about this vehicle, where this meat suit we're going through the world in.
Would you say that that is the will of we are the will of the vehicle?
I mean, kind of, but we're even more so, Tantra would say we're the Hridaya, the heart of the vehicle. We're the one who, you know, the vehicle has no purpose if we don't want to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. You still exist even if the car isn't running.
Yeah.
You still exist if it's just been parked there for...
Yeah. Which is also this deep question that I ask a lot. Why did you get up this morning? And people say, well, I had these. Yeah, but why did you want to do that? You didn't have to. Your vehicle would stay parked in that bed.
An inherent will to wake up and start a day. Right? I try to wake up with, you know, sort of a blank purpose, right?
Yeah.
I don't really want to have a focus for the day. Like, kind of want things to organically unfold. So I would say that, like, you know, maybe my car is getting into little small accidents throughout the day. But, you know, they're lessons, right? And it's fun, right? And
yeah.
I don't know. I really had a big question about, like, the monkey brain, right? Is that the busy part of us, like the busy brain, sort of all over the place? I want to know like a little bit more about some of these states of mind, right? Because I want to know which one I'm primarily in most of the time.
Monkey.
And I'm predominantly
feeling
like...
Well, there's no right or wrong.
Of course, there is no judgment, positive or negative.
But if you were saying, if you wanted to know more about the monkey brain, you'd say, okay, so while I'm driving this car over here, I see this really cool ice cream shop and you're off the road. You know, you're making these turns constantly. And so you're never getting where you're going because your mind is constantly going, ooh, that's cool. Oh, hey, fire hydrant.
That's,
gotta stop.
So that's the monkey sort
yeah,
of
yeah, that's
brain.
Kind of the monkey
kind
mind.
Kind of like a squirrel brain kind of thing
yeah,
too, right? Like,
ooh. Yeah, yeah. So those thoughts are taking over, but they're not really guided by...
They're not controlled or
a deep intention. Okay. So when you say you get up and just get going, for me, I always start with, and you don't have to, but I start with like, what's my intention for this day? So lots of people who know me know that, you know, my kids are the heart of my life. And so if I'm getting up for that day and I'm going to work, it's because I want to take care of them the best that I can and do well for them, right? You know, or if I'm getting up and I'm spending time with them, it's because they deserve my presence and my love, you know, and my fun.
What happens when you have your kids half the time? So...
Well, I do have my kids half the time.
Right. Okay, perfect. So that's where the split is for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because then, yes, I do want to get up when I have my children for that mm-hmm. day, right? And they're always my purpose, right? But at the same time, when I'm left to my own devices without them, right, then what is my new purpose, right? Or is there a different mm-hmm. purpose for me other than the, you know, getting up for them,
right?
Because they're not there, you know, in proximity, right?
For me, so it even though if my kids aren't with me, it doesn't mean that I'm doing what I do because of their presence. So
For the purpose,
So I teach every Sunday morning. I don't have my kids on Sundays. I'm getting up and I'm going to teach that class, not if we were saying in the perspective of my kids, because I want to be the best person I can possibly be for them. And that means I need to continue to grow. I need to have a growth mindset that says I'm going to continue to look inward at my patterns and my behaviors and you know, all the things that can get in the way of being fully present for them. So even though I don't have them today, I'm going to go make sure that I'm still doing the work.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, that's why I get up every day to go to work, right? So pay
yes.
the bills, give them a good life,
give
things like
life,
that, right?
But also to improve yourself
exactly.
so that you're in a
but
great
also
dad
for
them.
Myself, right?
That's right.
Because, you know, without taking care of myself or loving myself, how am I supposed to love anyone else, right?
Well, there's the heart of yoga therapy, which I say is that it's not at all a luxury. It is a responsibility for us to take good care of ourselves so that we can take care of the people we care about. And they don't have to worry about taking care of us.
I think it's good, though. I think it's nice to be aware that when I wake up in the morning, maybe I should be more conscious of what my purpose is every day. You know, I have my little rituals here or there mm-hmm. that are, you know, that start my day that make me realize like, hey, I'm me and this is me and this is what I like to do. And this is what prepares me for the outside world to step out my front door and mm-hmm. deal with whatever chaos may come my way. Right. So I think that's maybe that's something, yeah, I should probably put into practice more often is just saying it out loud. Right. Or
yeah.
or having that statement right before mm-hmm. I even get started. I think that's pretty powerful.
Now, you actually just touched on what is yoga therapy. That's one of the things we do. We talk about how do you get in touch with the heart of you? What are the intentional practices, the rituals that you have? What's your why behind things? So, you know, yoga therapy is that work in to be able to decide who's driving this car.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Very cool.
So, again, just to recap, what is the heart of yoga therapy?
What is the word that I used or what is the heart of yoga
therapy?
Well,
you agreed with what Chris said and you said you've stumbled onto the heart of yoga therapy.
Gosh, well, now I don't know if I'm going to repeat what I said because I'm very
well, actually,
bad.
I think I can remember. I think you said, you know, that's figuring out what is the heart of the heart, right?
Yeah,
of
the vehicle. Yeah.
What is the heart of the heart of our purpose, right? Or of us, right?
Yeah.
That's what you meant, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so that kind of helps in that regard, right?
So it was your desire to improve yourself so that you can make afford a better life for your kids?
I think it's more, it's not monetary, right? I think it's more like I want to be able to be like a well emotionally prepared individual, mm-hmm. first and foremost for my children, so that they can learn how to live a calm life amongst such a chaotic and static like environment. So I don't wake up every day for the money. I wake up mm-hmm. every day so that I can continue to feel fulfilled, right, in my life and feel true to whatever my purpose is and model that for my children.
That's
right?
It. Exactly.
So it's not the money, but no. You know, money is a, you know, is obviously a part of like our, you know, our process in our society and most societies, right? And so it's a tool. And do with it what you will, right? But I feel like I'm not someone that ever wants to make more than the next. I just want to live a comfortable life and provide for my children, right? And try mm-hmm. to try not to attach myself to that, right? Like that right. tool so much, right?
Totally.
Use it, I don't want to say manipulate, but use it for what purposes I need it for, to be happy, right? Within a system where I have to have it. But I guess answering your question, I wake up every day, right? To feel fulfilled, right? And whatever the day is going to bring, and my interactions with every person that I come across. And two, yes, like, you know, working really hard to, you know, give my children a good life, whatever that might look like. And that's materialistic and non-materialistic, right?
For sure.
Sometimes it's just love.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, in the end, it's all love, right?
I got a question for you both, because you both talked about it. You said morning ritual. I don't think I have a real one, except like I drink coffee, although... Yeah, today I did, but it's more of a habit. I think I just like to drink something and kind of chill for a second.
But, mine's pretty methodical.
Yeah, let's hear it. Can you share it?
Yeah, you know, it depends. Let's say without children, right? I'll wake up, I'll just try to do completely nothing for, you know, a little bit, drink some water, right? Hydrate from waking up. And then I love drinking tea, right? And so I drink a lot of Indian teas. And so I'll wake up and I'll make a nice, like, entire pot of tea, right? And I will let it steep at different, like, you know, variations of strength, start with it pretty weak and just sit and relax, right? And I'll light an incense or something and sit on my couch and just enjoy that moment, right, of quiet. Because I know that a lot of things when I leave that front door are going to try to push into whatever my mind state is, whatever my state of consciousness is, right? I've got to be prepared for that. So giving myself a little bit of reprieve and respite before I kind of put on like an armor, so to speak, to be able to sort of combat, right? Like some of this negativity or this transference of energy, which sometimes I don't have complete control of, right? Mm-hmm. And people sort of take from you all day, right? But that one little bit of maybe 20 minutes, right? To where I'll wake up, maybe do a few little things with a kettlebell, have that tea, just try to be a little bit active, get out of that waking, like sort of sleep dream state, right? Become conscious and then kind of, you know, go to work at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Or listen to a record, choose something that I know is going to elicit a certain type of emotion or feeling so that it prepares me for my day, right? But that's the gist of it, right? Just sitting, doing a little bit of a workout, right? So I can feel like blood's flowing, right? Mm-hmm. And then I sit there and I enjoy that tea and I like mindfully drink that tea and I know exactly how I want to make it and what it's going to taste like. And I enjoy it every day. And
well, my teachers would very much call that a practice of yoga.
Really?
Yeah. To mindfully do anything. To have an intention behind it and to mindfully do it. And so what he's speaking about, we would call it a dinacharya. And there's a morning routine and an evening routine, ratacharya. And they're actually all about what I call like an energy grid, building an energy grid. And it's the same thing. I'm mindfully doing this in order to hold my energy grid because I know I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get all this pushback against my energy grid. And I want it to be solid and steady and stable so that I don't get... got blown off course with every little thing, you know, back to the monkey mind kind of in the same way. And so when you're intentionally doing it, it's not just a habit, it's now a ritual that says I'm intentionally doing this, knowing that I want to remember, and this is really important to me, the who and whose I am. Right, who I am, so that could be just like who I am in this person who's quiet and steady and stable, and whose I am. For me, whose I am is not just my kids, but then also, you know, the connection I have to something way bigger. That's whose I am. And when I forget that, then I get pulled around all over the place, you know. And if I remember it every morning, the first thing that I do, then it's a lot harder to pull me around. Yeah. So you're doing the same thing.
Kind of do the same thing. And it's interesting that you said there was an evening ritual as well, right? And for me, that's like being able to come home for like an hour, right? In silence. And I don't want to talk.
Love it.
I don't really want to talk about anyone else's problems, right? What I do for a living, I take on people's problems all day, right? So I need a moment to just kind of, I guess, like process the stuff that I've kind of heard and helped people heal from or attempted to and sort of release all of that energy, right? And I don't want to accidentally transfer that on someone else in a negative way, right? So I try to make it really clear. We don't want to get home. I need like an hour, right? Sort of decompress and sort of, you know, take the scuba tank off and all that stuff, relax. And then in about an hour, right, things will have reset and I can talk to you about whatever you want. You know, I'm here for you 100%. But the only thing I ask is that you give me that second ritual, which is just letting go of the day and then taking on whatever they need, my family needs from me, right? But it's just having a good, healthy boundary, right? Because like you said, I'm trying to protect that energy grid, even with my own family, right? From it
you
being
are.
Pushed on all day. So it's really interesting. So I'm glad, what I'm getting at is that I'm glad that I'm practicing like appropriate ways to be able to kind of balance out those that energy throughout the day without even knowing it, right?
Yeah,
I think it's just me getting a little older, getting a little wiser and knowing, you know, sort of, you know, what I can, you know, what I can take, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
What my limits are.
And that's an important one too. And so you've just spoken to two things as a yoga therapist that I do. If someone's coming to me and saying, I'm having a hard time and things are bleeding over and whatnot, we set up rituals like that. And even, so my ritual is a cold shower and I wash off because the same thing, energy transference from my clients and the people I'm around all day. So I'm washing my hands in cold water and I'm ritualistically saying, this isn't mine.
Why the cold water?
Cold water is just a tradition from my teachers, passed down from my teachers, that the cold kind of wakes up the energy, but also says, and it's time to wash it clean.
Kind of expels it.
Kind of expels it,
it's interesting.
I do cold showers every night too. But it's all in
I'm
the same
try
thing.
That. I'm not going to like it.
You're not going to like it. We're going to side note and tell you.
I want to see what the difference is.
Every time anybody tells me they've tried it, they immediately turn it really cold. Don't do that. Okay, start slow.
It's kind of room temperature cold, or you're
talking
ice?
I did room temperature cold for like a week, and then I'd do room temperature cold and stay longer, and then I'd do colder and stay shorter, you know, until finally now it's pretty stinking cold, but it's been a year, you know. So just everybody is like,
that.
I turned it cold and I thought I was going to die. And like, it's nervous system response. Work so don't
but you
go
feel
crazy.
A real difference though with that cold
huge
that temperature
huge.
Change
we could totally tangent this but
actually no I want to tangent it but we have to take a quick break we have to do a second break so go ahead take us on Mr. Chris.
Join me, Robert Sevilla, for a Creative Mindset Thursdays at 4. In that hour I'll be talking to locals that have the creative mindset. Tune in to find out more about creative minds around you.
KYRS is grateful for the many listeners who have donated their vehicles to us. You can join them by donating your unwanted car, truck, minivan, motorcycle, and more. Vehicles are picked up free of charge, sold, and the proceeds help KYRS bring you the programs you know and love. It's easy to donate your vehicle, and it's tax deductible. Just call our toll-free line to arrange a free pickup. 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Thank you.
KYRS listeners pay attention to quality. They look for quality in their work and in their daily lives. If your business cares about quality customers, look to KYRS. Call 509-624-7573 for more information.
And we are back. Creative Mindset with Robert Sevilla, and I am Chris Rosales, which this will be the last time that I will be revealing my name.
Come on.
I will not have my real name attached to my show, which, again, is called People Talk and will be airing in about 2 weeks.
Oh, you're going to have an alias?
Yeah, I'm gonna really think about it. It's going to be something fun. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't know yet. I'm not going to tell you yet. Maybe I know. Maybe fine. I already that's know. Fine. I don't know.
You can. And our in-studio guest is Kristen
Guskey.
Good job.
Guskey.
That's Guskey. Right.
I'm a good listener.
And you teach out of a studio over in Liberty Lake, the only one I know of over there.
Yes.
Is it the Mat, right?
It is the Mat, and I've been there quite a long time.
And it's like a multi-use studio, right? They teach MMA there.
No, she used to do Taekwondo, and the Taekwondo program is now outsourced, but they still hold practices there. So she just runs the studio itself, but yeah, she rents it out to a Taekwondo place.
It's funny. I walked up to that, or I drove up that first time, and then I just yanked on this door without reading anything.
That
and
front
there's
door.
These, yeah, there's this big.
We
sign
always
on.
Know when you're new.
Yeah.
Always.
I yanked and I was like, go, 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 go. And it says, please use the rear entrance. So I was like, damn it. Like, everyone's going to know that.
Immature.
Yeah, you
gonna,
won't be
I thought
the
you
first.
Were going to say somebody like some Taekwondo
last.
Person just
karate chopped
you in the chest. That would have been
use the back door.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai forever. So, Kristen, you are on because you, one, I found you on Instagram where I find a lot of people. And I look for things that are interesting. And yoga therapy was just something I didn't know about,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I said in the beginning, I do yoga. I practice yoga for, we'll say 7 years and, took the yoga teacher's training,
mm-hmm.
but I still didn't understand. And I know it's like a full advanced degree. I know people
it
go
is.
Through,
yeah.
How long did it take you to get through the
so
school?
So when I speak about becoming a yoga therapist, a certified yoga therapist, I say it's kind of like getting a PhD, or like I also run a PT clinic, and it's like becoming a PT. So I did a 200 level training, obviously, and then I did a 500 level training to be able to teach teachers. So I do teach a teacher training program at the Mat, and then you need 1,000 hours of training or more to be a yoga therapist. You have to double that. And in that 3-year program, you get lots of different modules in treatment modalities, but then you have to do quite a few mentorships, and you have to do case studies, and you have to prove that you're a good clinician.
Wow.
And how you're working as a clinician. And so, yeah, it's pretty intense.
And it's not something that's taught locally, right? Don't you have to go out of this area to
get
into a program?
Yeah, I personally did mine. I started it during COVID, so mine was online,
mm-hmm.
With an in-person training, a 10-day retreat in-person training as well. But yeah, it has taken me over 3 years to finish it up.
Yeah, I know people that I think flew to the East Coast to do their in-person, and they would do like chunks of it at a time.
You have to do chunks at a time. And it's totally fair that you don't know too many. I think I'm the fourth one in this area. That's it.
What brought you to Spokane?
Side note. So what brought me to Spokane is I realized in teaching yoga, I used to teach at Ohio University, and lots of people would come to me. I would work with their sports teams and other people, and they would come to me and say, how do I work on this? How do I feel better from this? And so I said, I think I want to be a physical therapist. And so I applied to physical therapy school here at Eastern, and no offense to them, but I was not accepted. And that's great news, because it turns out I wanted to be a yoga therapist. So we moved here in order to go to school. That didn't work out, but I'm really nice and settled here. And it's similar to Boulder, but we left Boulder because literally couldn't afford to live there. So that's how we're here.
Yeah, and when you were, I want to talk a little bit. I know we don't have a lot of time, but when you were denied, right, your application into the PT, the school for physical therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was that like for you, right? Did you see that as like sort of a negative, or were you mm-hmm. able to like kind of pivot mm-hmm. off that, and that's what brought you to where you are today, right?
Two things. I mean, everything is a pivot. Everything is, back to Dharma, full cycle here. If it's a fight for me, I've noticed if it's too much of a fight for me, it's not meant to be, and it's not my path. And so I really was fighting tooth and nail to make that happen. And I said I was kind of a B student and I was a B mom, and I like to be an A+ mom. So it really broke my heart. So when I didn't get in, it broke my heart because I knew that was probably my only application window. But it also was like, oh, I did my very best, and now I can focus on kids and focus on, you know, what I think I really want to do, which is work as a yoga therapist. So it was both, because everything's always both.
Well, I like what you said, which was a very therapeutic statement, right? I did my best.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Positive cognition, right? To like sort of fight against that negative sort of cognition of like, I didn't get in, I failed, right?
But don't get me wrong, I was totally depressed for a while.
Of course, yeah. No. I'm really, yeah. And it's just yeah. a testament, right, with where right. you are today, right?
Yeah.
What you're doing and how you're helping others, right, in a very powerful way. And it didn't deter you. Right.
Not at all. And I learned so much because I did all the prerequisites to become a physical therapist, which means that I specialize in good biomechanical alignment and functional movement and great core training on lots of stuff, not just how to breathe well.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But breathing's important.
Well, of course.
You do it all day long.
Funny about that.
That's part of my rituals. I get up and I wake up in the morning and breathe.
And I just breathe.
Well, we got like a minute and a half left. So like if there was a good takeaway from a listener tuning in, hearing about maybe yoga, they've heard about it, they thought it might have been a religion, they thought mm-hmm. it was, you know, there were a bunch of witches. Now that's kind of
gone. Or they just want to be flexible, or they want to get a workout. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't exclude those folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that a lot. I'm not flexible enough. I would say the takeaway for them is that yoga gives you tools to know yourself better. And when you know yourself better, you are empowered to be able to heal yourself, to take care of yourself and be present with yourself. And that empowerment has been essential in my life.
I've heard the word empowerment a lot, right, throughout this interview. And, you know, that's a strong word for me as well, right? Mm-hmm. Being motivated and feeling like I can muster the energy, right, to kind of get through that next day, mm-hmm. right? And so I really feel like that's probably what I strive for every day when I wake up, right, is the feeling of empowerment in myself and helping others feel empowered, right?
Because, right. Again, don't get me wrong, I've been in some low places.
Yeah.
And yoga, I've been practicing over 25 years.
Wow.
And it's been with me the whole time. It's a love affair. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it.
Thanks.
I'll have to come check out the studio.
I would love that. Yeah.
And tell us again how to find that and how they can find you.
So I am at The Mat in Liberty Lake. I specifically teach only one hot power class, and then I teach gentle therapeutic classes. So anybody can come. I specialize in people who have injuries of all sorts. I'm there to help. And to find me particularly is joyfulpose.com. You can see the teacher trainings, the retreat. I'm doing a retreat this Saturday. I do retreats. I do workshops every month. I do sound baths. And also on there is information about my classes and ways to book with me privately, because I do a lot of private one-on-one work.
Cool.
Yeah, one-on-one is important. Yeah, I don't think you can get that same thing from a full class. All right, Mr. Chris, take this out of here. Back to automation. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Show.
Hi, you're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane,
88.1 and 92.3 FM.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I insist that all attempts to impede, to intimidate, or to improperly influence the officials of this court cease immediately.
When ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan announced he was seeking arrest warrants against the Israeli Prime Minister and he warned against any attempts attempts to interfere with the court. Now a new investigation by The Guardian and 972 reveals Israel ran an almost decade-long secret war against the ICC in an attempt to derail it from filing war crimes charges against Israeli officials. We'll speak with former Human Rights Watch head Ken Roth, who says the ICC spying revelations show the Israeli government to be a lawless regime. Then the largest university in Canada, the University of Toronto, files a request for the police to clear a pro-Palestinian encampment on campus.
We say to our administration, if you decide to move against the students, you'll have to go through us first.
We'll speak with University of Toronto professor Deb Cowan and a Palestinian student from Gaza who's a member of the U of T student negotiating team. Then how 3M discovered, then concealed, the dangers of forever chemicals.
After years of reporting on PFAS chemicals, I was left with a few nagging questions. I knew that some people inside the 3M Corporation, which made the chemicals, had known long ago that the chemicals had spread into the blood of the general public.
We'll speak with investigative journalist Sharon Lerner about how 3M found its own toxic compounds in human blood.